When two intersea superpowers go to war, the ripples are felt throughout the region. A group of intrepid heroes, or should we say, intrepid rebels, join a league of righteous freedom fighters to liberate their people from the binds of infernal tyranny. Nefarious forces from without and within will do anything to stop these hellbreakers. I'm Jason, and I'll be your GM for this diabolical defiance.
I'm Rue, my pronouns are they, he, or ze, and I play Nalastri, a Strix champion of Arshea, devoted to breaking Chalaxian shackles.
I'm Isis, and I'm playing Mizera, formerly of the Golden Arrhenius, a Nephilim human sorcerer hoping to save Isker and herself from hell.
I'm John, and I'm playing Thaddeus T. Millwright, a halfling inventor with a sinister secret.
I'm Ron, and I'm playing Augustus Men Shuxley, a gnome lawyer and witch.
And I'm Mark, playing Flack, a goblin ranger who has something to prove.
And now, on with the episode. Previously, our intrepid Hellbreakers faced off against Lamperia Bane, captain of the Witchfire, as she held their comrade Rokrag hostage. Alongside her fought a Chalaxian marine that revealed himself to be some kind of devil by spitting webs from his mouth. The ruthless Captain Bane cut down Rokrag, but was herself then slain before their hobgoblin ally bled out. Later, when he was conscious, Rokrag revealed that she was looking to turn him over to a Hell Knight, hell-bent on revenge. Are the Hellbreakers being hunted? 6th of Lamashin, 4725, Absalom Reckoning. So, you guys sort of saved Rokrag, and you took the Witchfire back down, back to Sarengal. It took like a day or whatever. And you're essentially sort of like, Rokrag is like meeting up with, eventually, quickly found someone to sort of like take that ship apart. Not take it apart, but like essentially strip it of any thing that looked kind of Chalaxian about it. Because it was a very kind of black and white, black and green, kind of like spooky looking ship. So that's basically sort of in a dry dock, basically off, and they're going to repurpose it for Hellbreakers supply runs and that sort of thing. And while the rest of you are kind of like heading back down to the HQ or some other place where you're staying to recuperate for about 3 or 4 days, right? And so you get all healed up and you just rest up and whatever. And there's also, of course, leveling up, which you've all sort of done beforehand. So in that time, I want to know what you guys are up to. Are you sort of laying low? Are you practicing something, training something? Let me know a little bit about what you're up to and something new about your character. Who would like to go first? Anyway.
I'll go first.
Okay, John.
So, Tad has been very disappointed in his performance here helping his friends. It's been very hit or miss. So he's been trying to do some things to maybe make himself a little bit more useful. He's an inventor. He's very calculating and thinking about this stuff. But he realizes kind of his halfling nature that he needs a bit more luck. And so he's been praying to Chaldira for some sign, for something to help improve what he can do. And sure enough, he realizes now that when he's focused in his thoughts and his prayers and helping his friends, that this Chaldira gives him some increased accuracy, it seems like. Right. So I have this new dedication for unexpected sharpshooter, which gives me an accidental shot where once a day I can basically roll twice and take the highest to hit and damage score.
Yeah.
But not only that, I also realize that I get hurt a lot and so do my friends. And I've been thinking with my own inventor abilities, what can I do about that? And so I've devised this healing way to use explosives to cauterize wounds.
Wait, what?
Yes! Yes!
I'm not sure that looks like that.
You're going that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can burn someone a little bit to cauterize
wounds.
It's called
searing restoration. And it only burns a little bit. But you can regain some hit points from that.
That's lovely. I like to think that like what this unexpected sharpshooter stuff is about you is essentially like you maybe like the first time you're doing a you're in some practice range or whatever, and you like accidentally the gun goes off when you're not pointing at the target, and it like banks off like three things.
Yes.
And it hits the target straight in the head or whatever, and you're like, whoa, and you kind of just feel this glow, because Chaldira is also known as the Calamitous Turn.
Yeah.
And most likely you're sort of like do a little more damage other places, but your shots can end up ringing a little more true.
Yes, yes. And that's what we need. I need to be more true.
Everyone needs, a little more lucky.
Or lucky.
Needs to be a little more true. Yeah. And in this case, it's both. And one can't have one without the other. Isis.
Yeah.
You wanna go ahead?
Mizera, the recovering Diabolist that she is, has been trying to spend some more of her time, like, getting to really, like, know the Hellbreakers, trying to work with them, like,
sure, yeah.
Trying to understand this new cause that she's apparently, like, you know, setting to dedicate herself to. So I think she's actually been trying to, like, trying to hone a lot of, like, her magic. This is not the kind of training that she would have been given a lot as a young one.
Yeah.
It's a little freaky of a magic, so... she's been focusing on her spells, her blood, all of these things, and I've actually taken the time to get to know what I can do a little bit better, and I have the now entreat with Forebearer's Feet, so I get some bonuses when I am dealing with and talking to creatures of my bloodline. you know.
I wonder if that'll come in handy.
I wonder if that'll...
Oh. Yeah, maybe.
I don't think so.
You're probably spending some time with Moira, kind of like, because she's the kind of, in a lot of ways, the face, not the face of the entire organization, but sort of here, she does a lot of talking. Mm-hmm. She's a lot of storytelling and whatnot. So she's telling you a little bit about how to better, like, charm people, but you're sort of like, what people? Well, what about devils? Okay, you can kind of make that transition into figuring out. Oh, I know how people. I don't want to talk to those people. Let's talk to devils a little bit better. Let's scare them. Let's be against them. Cool. Anyone else?
I can go.
Mark.
So Flack realized that the having run out of arrows a couple of times in our last adventure. That he needed to transition from his bow to his dog slicer, and was unhappy with how that transition was being made. It was too much effort, not too slow. And so he spent a lot of time practicing that in particular and just going for how to really smoothly move from one to the other and back and that sort of thing. And he's acquired the quick draw feat.
Yeah, nice. I've forgotten their name. The one who you helped at the very beginning. Ethan Howell is a Eagle Knight, right? And so they know a little bit about martial stuff. So you're probably maybe like they're helping train you, and even though they've lost an arm, they're sort of may helping you figure out the best way to like go right in like into an attack, draw an attack.
Oh, good.
So you're basically doing repetitions of that on a training dummy.
Muscle memory.
Until it's muscle memory. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I had one other thing I wanted to do, if that's all right.
Sure.
Flack is also trying to make connections with other people after a very long period of basically isolation. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't come naturally to him. It's very hard. But he wants to approach Tad at some point. And this is the sort of thing where he's trying really hard to look casual. And he's kind of sidle up to Tad and Tad, I talk to you?
Sure, you're talking to me right now.
Hey,
it works well.
Me wanted to say thank you.
Then you should say thank you then.
Just saying thank you.
You're welcome.
In the tavern, that Longshanks was very mean to me and said mean things and even tried to kill me. And you put him down like a true friend. And thank you. Means a lot to me.
You put your friends down?
No.
You're not there.
okay.
Yeah. That boomstick, you make that yourself?
Oh, yes. It's very special. And I kind of pull it out and
show
the full length of it here. And yeah, be mindful of the pointy end. It's pointy on it, too.
It's very loud. With it.
And it's loud, yes.
I made this hat.
Very, very pointy as well. Yes.
and he scurries off. That's it. He's done.
Good. Love it, Flack. Good. Having a little short moment there. Terrific. Who's next?
I can go next.
Roof. Yep.
Nolastri has been spending a lot of time in and around the temples. Like, there may or may not actually be a temple to Arshea here, but there are other temples, I assume.
I think in Sarangelo there's probably a space where there's a sort of a multi-faith kind of come here and worship whoever it is that you want to worship kind of space, and it's not dedicated to any one god, but just kind of an open market, so to speak.
Yeah, and they have been spending a lot of time there sort of helping the healers and sort of taking care of people. They are not upset with themselves for how easy it was to kill people in these last couple of conflicts, but they don't quite like how much they have done, even though those people were not necessarily good people. And so they want to kind of give back for
sure,
that.
Yeah.
And I have taken the divine health feat for
lovely
Nolastri. So now anyone in her aura will get a bonus to saving throws against poison and disease.
Lovely.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I think here on the Sarangelo map that we can see here, there's a big graveyard off to the west, and then in front of that is a temple to Arastil, but there's one of these other buildings is most likely one of that kind of smaller, wider temple for other gods and deities. So yeah, you spend some time there getting to know the sort of situation in Sarangelo, which is again sort of with the war sort of going on between Andoran and Cheliax, I think the people of Sarangelo are hiding their hope a little bit. They are probably, never been a fan of Cheliax themselves. Going way back, the reason why the town is named the way it is because of the Serini family, which was put up on some gallows. So it has been sort of a people's city, for lack of a better word. But they are not outwardly flaunting any kind of rebellion because they've seen what's happened to other people who try to sort of stand up against Cheliax or try to say something against send the word to the steward Headvend and be like, hey, we don't like it, that guy is fully in Cheliax's pocket. So you do know, but you can kind of get a feel that undercurrent of people being well, maybe this could be a thing. Oh, and hearing a little bit about Hellbreakers, the Hellbreakers are probably known. They know they exist here, even though I think, of course, most people don't know this is the sort of headquarters of the organization. It's just heard about what they're doing here and there and heard some things and maybe even heard, you get coming back to you a little bit of a rumor, not a rumor, just sort of saying, oh, the Hellbreakers, some people are like, well, they're attacking people, they're stealing stuff. If I heard a group of Hellbreakers sort of save those Chilaxian sailors as their boat was burning, and you're like, oh, yes, yeah, I remember that. So you get a little bit of, it's clearly they're talking about the stuff that, without knowing that it's you, but that you all are doing. Ron.
All righty. Well, Augustus Manshuxley is going to realize that success of the Hellbreakers is going to be as much due to successes in the court of public opinion as the court of law. But that means he is going to take the time, these 3 or 4 days of downtimes, to be sure to hit whatever legal guidance he can, especially around devil contracts and the like. Mm-hmm. Hod, his assistant, spends a lot of time helping him and particularly brushing out Augustus's luxurious eyebrows and mustache. And unlike the rest of you, I didn't get the memo about taking useful feats. So I now have contract negotiator, which lets me use legal lore in place of diplomacy for certain uses of diplomacy. And perhaps more importantly, when you happen to catch perhaps out of the corner of your eye, you see Augustus's mustache lengthen and extend to grab a quill pen that he can write with. I have taken witch's armaments, living hair, so I can attack with my eyebrows and my wondrous mustache.
Yes! Oh, what are you talking about? This is the best.
What do you mean not useful? That's the most useful thing.
It's hilariously useful. Yes, again, one of those things, constantly reminded that Augustus is a witch. Like, just I have to, like, I'll forget it. And when this, but the next time, you know, the next half hour is gone, like, oh, it's Augustus. He's a lawyer.
Augustus is a lawyer.
He is a witch. He is a witch and does weird witchy stuff. So, yeah, I can definitely see you sort of poring over, you know, a book, looking at all these sort of tomes of legal lore while Hod is brushing, you know, waxing and oiling your stash. And one, maybe one point, like, you slap him away with the stash. He's like, no. doesn't say anything again, not saying anything, just sort of like nodding and apologies if anything ever goes wrong. Okay, so that's fantastic. You're all getting a little more powerful in lots of different little ways, and there's other things if you wanted to do while during this downtime. If there's anything you wanted to purchase or sell or think about purchasing, we can go over and do that sort of maintenance as well.
Arrows, lots of arrows.
Well, yeah. Sure. So you can definitely get arrows here for sure. There's a thing that, well, I don't know if we did the, because when you got Ethryn to Sarangelo, they gave you basically a +1, their +1 sword, but it was a two-handed sword.
Oh, right.
So I don't know. Did we ever move that +1 around? That's the question.
That moved on to my weapon, I believe.
Right, it got onto your weapon. So we did move that, yeah. Okay, great. But you do notice that we have some stuff in the stash, such as some rings and some talismans that are in there, and other trinkets and whatnot that you can sort of sell for money, if you like.
I picked up alchemical crafting. I'd like to craft some alchemical things.
Okay.
I've been kind of tinkering with stuff, and I'm not sure. I'm looking at my sheet here, and it says I can get quantity of 4 for 12 gold if I get bottled lightning. Is that right? I'm not sure if that's the proper math.
One of those things.
Yeah. No, it is.
Always remember how to do. Yeah. We'll say yes for now.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's like the prices are right from what I've seen before. So, I push the craft button and it makes a roll for me, I'm guessing?
Should. Yes.
Okay. So I like to craft some of all these, or can I only, I don't know how much I can craft.
Well, I mean, this is the question of how long, like, this is full crafting and not just like things that you get on a daily basis, like some other thing. This is going to take time. Okay. So I'll say we have to roll for it and see how long it takes, basically. I'm going to kind of, because I wasn't quite prepared to adjudicate crafting right now, we're going to kind of gloss over it a little bit in terms of what the rules are, but give me a roll, and then we'll see if there's any chance you can maybe try it for another batch in the 4 days.
Okay. So I will roll. I'm trying to make some bottled lightning.
That sounds fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically that's you spending 1 day to basically you're getting a discount as we see here, 3 silver pieces on the cost of the whole thing, instead of just buying it outright. So you can basically pay half of components with gold and keep rolling and then eventually sort of try to fill up for the whole thing. Taking several days to do that, right? Basically.
I don't know if I have several days or not.
Well, you do have several days. This is just 1 day of work. So if you did it we'll just say for the 3 or 4 days that you have off, if you just work on this plus all the other training that you're doing, and then spend 6 gold pieces,
Okay.
I think you'll be good. Yeah.
So I'll craft one more thing then, or one more set of stuff.
Well, I think it's going to, no, casting these four bottled lightnings is going to take you the three okay. or 4 days.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. Nice. Then. Got it.
Yeah. Cause right now, basically you sort of, how much is bottled lightning normally? Lesser, right? Okay. So if you get four, so yeah, 12 is how much you'd pay if you just went and bought them. Right.
Okay.
And so every roll you're reducing, and you have to provide 50% of that just in materials.
Got it.
Before okay. you start crafting. And then when you craft, you're getting 3 silver pieces, a day's worth of that other, the rest of it. So 4 days is going to give you 12 silver pieces, which is really technically going to be 1 gold, 1.5 goldish. It does seem to take a long time to sort of craft anything.
Fine. So I will make some bottled lightning.
I'm just going to give you some food. Just pay 4 and you'll be good. And pay 6 gold and you're good.
Okay. I'll do that.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Cool.
Okay.
Anything else anybody want to do with their money or their gear before we move on?
Should we pick up a couple of healing potions just for security,
just to have
sake.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Sell these trinkets too. Sell these trinkets. So you've got 45 gold in sort of like cash on you.
Right. Yeah. Did we distribute any money?
No, it's just sitting in there.
Okay.
I
was gonna say my inventory doesn't show anything like that.
It's in the party stash.
It's in the party stash. I can distribute coins evenly to all of you if you'd like as well. And you can just say, and you can spend your coins however you wish, which I think I will just go ahead and do right now. Because that's going to basically 9 gold for each of you.
Oh,
feel
yeah,
free to spend your 9 gold however you do. Now, the way you can do this, Mark, just so you know, just like if you take an item from, you know, a compendium, you have to then reduce your gold manually. It doesn't.
Oh, manually.
No shops. Okay. I haven't. Right. There are ways to do that in Foundry, but I haven't crafted one of those for us yet.
Okay.
So, and you know, you think about it, there's going to be a little more, there's going to be some time to before you have to like leave and move away from any other shops and be sort of without buying and selling things yet. So, but I just want to sort of give you the heads up that you've had us a couple of days, so, you know, can prepare to figure out what's next. Because you're going to have to actually go to a big meeting at the end of the day. It's like Monday. The 6th of Lamashin, you sort of get a note from Rokrag, to meet in the Hellbreakers HQ basement. And so you do, and the place is crowded. There's some of the Hellbreakers you've already met, some Hellbreakers you haven't met yet. And it is just sort of lots of peas and carrots and murmuring and whatnot. People want, you know, wanting to know what's going on. It's clear that, Rokrag sort of like asked everyone to keep a sort of a semi-low profile for the past couple of days after what just happened after you having to go rescue him and to sort of like bring that boat in. But he then sort of climbs up onto the table and he's got a letter basically with him. And he says, everyone quiets down as he sort of clears his throat to sort of get everyone's attention. And he says, we have just got word from Alceo and Phoebe and they are quite pleased with our efforts so far. And everyone's like, yeah, good job. They especially want to acknowledge the efforts of my rescuers. And he points at the lot of you, of course. And Moira from the corner shouts, and just tell you to stay away from boats from now on. And there's some laughter. And he's like, oh, well, you know, we all make mistakes. Sorry. So the Demetriuses are reporting that due in large part to our supply raids on various trade vessels, Druma, our neighbor sort of to the north, has begun to limit their trade routes on the Canarica. Yes. This will hurt Isgar's economy a little more than Chelyax's for now, but it is a start to breaking Chelyax's control over us. Right? Hedven is likely going to increase military patrols near the river, maybe even going so far as to ask for soldiers from Thrun. Boo, the mention of Thrun. Boo, hiss. Now, the Demetriuses are suggesting that we ease back on the raids for now. We need to show citizens of Isgar that the Hellbreakers League is more than a band of violent insurgents, yeah? So they need to know that we care about the land and its people. This is our land. These are our people.
Hooray, cheers. Mm. Yay!
So over the next few weeks, you'll be going out amongst the people to spread the word of why Isgaria independence is so important. Talk to them. Find out what's important to them and convince them that it's important to you as well. And if they need your help, give it. And so for the rest of the meeting, it's just sort of spreading out. Rokrai kind of gives everyone assignments in big groups, and people are sort of like, you're going to take over this part of, you're going to go over to the northwest of Israel. You're going to go to the northeast of Israel. He comes to you and he tells you that you're going to be sort of assigned an area of Israel that's south of the river here, but north of the Chitterwood. And that, and sort of not so far is west as Logas or as east as Dustpan, a sort of a slice of Izgur, just sort of straight down south of Sarangilo. I'm actually going to bring us to an Izgur map right now. Kind of zoom in here. Basically, this sort of like chunk east of Swift Run and sort of between these two rivers north of the Chitterwood. Are going to be sort of spaces for you to go and check some things out. He does note that there is some towns that are known, such as Umak, the gnome town that's just north of the Chitterwood, and Vordia, which Isis is where Mizera is from. He also points out that the closest place is this fort called Wolf Point. It's been a bit abandoned, but I think there might be people either checking up in there or roaming around. See if you can't stop by there and see if there's any issues with that place. And there is another town called Stumpfield, a sort of a goblin, a human sort of encampment that you can go to and just see how they are doing. So you can go to these places as any order you wish to, however you want to travel. And you have sort of obviously free reign to help them out if they need help. Yeah? Okay.
Good.
Okay.
This honestly sounds like a good task. You are both very good at talking, gesturing to Mizera and Augustus.
Yes, although I will say I wasn't really expecting to go back home this early.
Well, I mean, if you know the people there, you can maybe have an edge. Now. This is part of the reason I asked them, asking the five of you to go to these places. Some of you have some people there that you already know, some people or could possibly connect with in the case of the Stumpfield.
Yes, if I'm remembering correctly, Umak, which is a little bit further south there, the gnome village is the one that has outlawed legally and morally fire.
Correct.
Because of its danger.
That is correct. If there are
conceptually,
I will also just sort of point out that this is going to start to be a section where you're going to be earning reputation points for the Hellbreakers League. Depends on how you're helping people out and whatnot, and maybe some things come up story wise. There might be some results of roles that'll make this go up and down. Because you did save that guy from the river snakes, you're starting off with one reputation point. That's still, let's say, Hellbreakers, there's lots of rumors about them and false information. A lot of people still think that's true. So at this sort of juncture, it's not the best to sort of march into a town and go, we represent the Hellbreakers League. Probably. Especially in a place like Vordia, which is pretty Cheliax friendly. That might just sort of, you're just going to be a little more circumspect about things. Mm-hmm. You can also sort of try to gain additional reputation points basically once a day as you travel, just kind of like stopping at a farm, trying to maybe run into some people who are passing by and trying to kind of give a little surreptitious chat about why Jellyx sucks and try to get people on the Hellbreaker side, that kind of stuff. Yeah, that kind of thing. So that's going to be how that'll work. I'll sort of, if you have any other questions, you can ask me about that. Mm-hmm. And maybe at some point it'll be a point where the Hellbreakers League has nothing but good things about them and you can openly announce your allegiance.
I wonder if we shouldn't first see whether anyone in these communities needs any assistance and perhaps only afterward let them know the fine folk who have given you the assistance you so badly needed are members of the Hellbreakers. We can seed a good reputation by starting with some good deeds.
Indeed. And that's kind of what Rokrak is getting at. Sort of like, it's about going out there and just kind of talking to the people. He expects everyone to sort of, if they want to head out right away, they can, or you can wait till tomorrow. So there's no like time limit on this exactly. But you know, again, so if there's anything you want to get before you go, and if there's any sort of like things you want to try to learn about any of these particular places, there are essentially four places, that is Wolf Point, Ordea, Stumpfield, and Umak. The four are sort of like, they think of it might be the hot spots, where you can do the most sort of something, get the most people on your side, basically. So if there's any, like, I don't know, I suppose you want to like, you know, you might not have, I might have to make you a roll about this particular town since you've from there, but if there's anything, oh, what do I know?
Sure.
Feel free to ask me. And if there's anything other, and these other places you want to, anybody wants to know about, you can roll for it.
All right. Well, I guess I'll brain blast my thoughts. Try to be like, what do I actually remember about how things are going over there?
Right. Because you haven't been back in a while.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute.
Yes. I think as you're growing up, you left probably as like a teen maybe? Or
yes,
even before that.
I believe so.
So yeah, you grew up in an orphanage. You grew up in the Bright Embers orphanage under the auspices of the Sisterhood of the Golden Aranis, right? Mm-hmm. And they raised you basically like as Asmodeus is pretty good. He, you know what? He's helping you out here. As long as you follow the rules, you'll be blessed by him below, essentially, right? You remember that you probably. It was a bit, you know, you're a child. You didn't know that much. But when you got a little bit older, when you got a little more savvy, when you left the orphanage itself, before, you know, you never got fostered, basically, right? You never got foster parents. You started to realize that, you know, Vordia itself, the whole town, is pretty conservative. They are. It's a small sort of a small town, just sort of tucked in almost in the foothills of the mountains there. But they are, you know. Because of the Goblin Blood Wars, they had lost a lot of families. Families lost a lot of relatives there in those wars. And so when the Sisterhood of the Golden Aranis sort of came by to sort of pick up these war orphans, it created a lot of goodwill, right? They're basically sort of like, oh yeah, that worship of Asmodeus ain't so bad. It's helping us out. It's sort of helping us put things back together. It's helping us sort of figure out things for ourselves. We have a specific question about that, but that's what you know, having come from there.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I guess realistically, I'm more interested, like, how much of a hold does that, you know, mindset and organization still have with the war and everything kind of breaking out? I guess the thing I'm going to have to look into is has anything collapsed there in the past 10 years or whatever?
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to give me either a society check or a diplomacy check to gather information around Sarangelo itself? Or Isgari lore? If you do have Isgari lore, that's a lore that one might want to take with your levelings up that you were asking about.
That's a good.
Or religion. Religion is also a skill you can use.
Oh, I have religion. I also rolled diplomacy, and I didn't roll very well, but that's
okay. So I think Verdea is a small town in comparison to Sarangelo, especially in comparison to Sarangelo. So not a lot of people from Sarangelo know what's going on in Verdea right this moment. They haven't heard much about it. Nothing huge has come out that has made big enough news that the people of Sarangelo are talking about it, right? It's just kind of like, oh, Verdea, that's some, you know, hick town sort of in the mountains.
I mean, all right.
That's the sort of vibe that you get from the people you ask.
Right.
Right? You know. The snooty Sarangalans are turning their noses
Someone
up.
Someone was like, oh yeah, that stupid hick town out in the mountains. And I just kind of like twiddle my thumbs and like shuffle away. That's all I get.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Some real bumpkins out there. Yeah.
You'd have to be, if you grew up in that town, you're probably a fool.
Yeah.
But you get, I mean, if you did bring that up, you probably get the impression of like, oh, you got out. That's good for you. You're in the city now.
Yeah. How would you want to go back there? Well,
you don't want to go back there. Anyone else want to do any sort of checks?
I'd like to find out about Stumpfield.
Okay. Yeah. Great. That's also against society or diplomacy for looking around or goblin lore if you happen to have it.
Oh yeah. Goblin lore is probably the way.
Yeah.
So. Oh.
Oh, he's gone.
A9.
What do you even know about goblins?
Yeah.
They don't have lore. They don't write it down.
I've spent a long time avoiding them, is what it's, I know.
Yes, because you spent a fair amount of time avoiding them, you haven't heard much. You get a little bit of like whispers that it's a sort of a artistic community.
Oh.
And again, maybe that's something that you're like, oh, I'm a rainy isle. I live in the woods.
Yeah, that's not my bag. Kind of
not your bag. So you don't know much about what's going on there at all.
Okay.
Tad's curious about this fort.
Yeah. Okay. Again, sort of society, diplomacy for asking around, warfare lore, actually, if you have that.
Is this Wolf Point?
Wolf Point, yeah.
I don't know much
about
Wolf
Point. We're
all
rolling terrible. Oof. None of us know anything.
Terrible role. It was built a long time. It was built like before the Goblin Blood Wars and was used in the Goblin Blood Wars. But other than that, it's like, I don't think it's not a active fort. That's what you know.
I thought you were just going to say it was built.
It was like, built. You know stopped. That it exists.
It was built a long time ago.
Period.
With a role like that, that's what you get. It was built.
I mean, anyone else can want to. Try
oh, yes, I will, make sure to assemble my notes in good lecturing order and then lecture people about the gnome town of Umok.
Yeah.
With the society
again,
of...
Yes. Let's see it.
Woo-hoo! Hey,
there we go.
There you go.
So, the critical success on my society role to illuminate my companions about Umok.
You were pretty recently there, like, with like a month or two ago, basically, right? Mm-hmm. You were there and you're not from there, but you spent some time there, like, you know,
right.
before sort of joining up with the Hellbreakers. And so you know a lot about Umok. You know, the one thing you said, of course, is that they have outlawed fire. They sort of cook and heat through magical means, basically, you know, heated stones and whatnot. It is within 500 yards of the village. Outskirts itself. So anything even coming close to Umok can't bring fire that close. And the way they sort of enforce that, a lot of gnomes sort of have the ability to talk to small animals. And so they've kind of enlisted the surrounding wildlife, bunnies and badgers and squirrels and whatnot, to kind of keep an eye on anyone sort of carrying an open flame. And if anyone comes within 500 yards carrying an open flame, the nature knows and kind of whispered campaigns itself back to the citizens of Umok. And then they go in, I guess, with a big bucket of water and put the thing out. This is all because goblins tried to burn that village down during the Goblin Blood Wars.
Do they put up signs?
They do. I think there's some signs, but on the main road for sure.
No, like, you just got to know.
It's, you know, there's one road that goes into it.
You have to read Gnomish.
On the outskirts, yeah, they're probably in Gnomish. Gnomish and Kong. But like, you know, through out of the forest, for instance, there's no real road, but if you staggered in with a thing. In addition, you know that the Umoks, they raise, a lot of them raise Isgari boarhounds, which are sort of faithful animal, often bred to be faithful animal companions here. These are basically kind of like Great Danish kind of dogs. So they kind of stand almost as tall as some gnomes.
Wow. We don't, understanding that we live in a post-alignment world, are the folk of Umok, do they tend to be open to visitors? Are they kind of surly to visitors?
No,
what's their general attitude?
I think their general attitude is, because they also are all gnomes, I think the general attitude is like, hey, you a new person? Great. Come on in. We want to meet a new person. We want to have, tell us about some stuff and what's going on that's interesting that we can stave off the bleaching kind of stuff. So they are not insular. They just have this very, this one very strict rule about no fire. And I get it again because of something that has happened within living memory for a lot of the gnomes. And it was pretty bad. So yeah, I think one would imagine they might be how they feel about devils. Probably not super great about them since they are often associated with fire in a lot of ways. But you know, they live in Izgir, which is a thrall state of Cheliax. So, you know, they make do, because of where they are too. They're not like, they're kind of, I don't know if you can see this on the map exactly, but there is an old like Hell Knight Citadel that is kind of nearish Umak. There's not been a lot of like contact between, like historically speaking, between the Hell Knights and these gnomes. So they don't, they just were like, we're being left alone for the most part. We're fine.
Right.
Yeah. Rudy, you want to
make that?
Check to see if you know about something or anything.
So this is not exactly like about one of the locations.
Sure.
But can I do some research and digging and see if I can learn anything about the particular Hell Knight that it has the ransom out on Rokrag? Right.
Okay.
Good call. Yeah.
Oh, smart.
I like it.
You did get Rokrag had a name, or at least a last name, which is Ahala.
Ahala.
A-H-A-L-A. So yeah, see if you can see if anyone might know anything about this particular person.
Decent.
It's a decent enough role, which is interesting that you can't find anything about this person. You're getting maybe one, especially in Sarangallo. They're not anyone super famous, let's say. You know, they weren't like a general or anything in the conflict that happened up at Breach Hill. You're not even sure what order they might be from. Now, you do know from what's going on that the order of, oh no, I've forgotten. I think it was the Order of the Nail that's done a lot of the sort of attacking basically here as the ones who are sort of literally sort of about suppressing rebellions, I think.
Yeah.
They have been sort of conscripted by House Thrun to be the sort of the I'm not gonna say an arm of their army, but you get the point, right? They're a part of their almost national military at this point, even though they purport, Hell Knights in general purport to be kind of like, we're neutral on all this sort of, but you know, we just sort of follow the law basically of what's going on here. We're not necessarily governmental organizations.
Possibly Nola's least favorite order.
Of course, yeah.
As a liberation champion.
100%. They're like diametrically opposed to your own sort of beliefs in a lot of ways.
So just imagine Nola very angry, like reading papers in the back, just like muttering to himself about how much he hates these people.
Awesome. As you can see on the map here, Wolf Point is the closest, but which one of these, so I know where you want to go, do you want to head to first?
Well, I'm not opposed to a lengthy ramble through the Izgari countryside, but if Wolf Point is right here, and many of us have legs that are not very long, perhaps we should go to Wolf Point first.
Yeah,
I suppose that does make the most sense, yeah.
All right, so you start. Do you go that very day that you're given the sort of your assignments, or do you wait till the next day after chatting up a bunch of people and doing some research? Sounds like you did a lot of like talking and asking around, so you're probably waiting till the next day.
I think that makes sense.
The next day, getting
research.
Because also it was like a dinner party we went to, right?
It was kind of more like a first not the first thing in the morning, but like almost a lunchtime meeting that you had with Rokrag. Yeah. Basically, just so people could get them going. And because
a revolutionary brunch with mimosas.
I think because it is sort of a slight, not first thing in the morning, there's there's some bread from the Gunty's bakery that Zara brings with them as they're sort of like, well, this is from yesterday, but we can all eat it. So it's like day old, like pastries and cakes and chow down on as part of your brunch. But the next day, you get up, I guess probably early enough to sort of set on out, pack yourselves together, and sort of heading. Basically, this is probably maybe like a ferry just across the Canarica River there. And then you can kind of like march along the sort of southern bank along that for a bit. Although probably actually you could probably take a bit of a ferry sort of down to the where the river splits, right? Yeah. For a bit and then get off and then walk there. While you're sort of marching sort of south of the rivers here, do you want to do one of these sort of reputation point checks?
Yeah,
it's just sort of like,
oh, yes.
Hey, there's a farm fed there. Maybe you can just sort of go knocking on doors, basically asking around. So,
have you heard the good news of the Hellbreakers?
Hello.
It's going to be basically like, I think we'll say you'd get to Wolf Point probably at the evening of the first day if you take a river ferry down a little bit and then march a bit. So you can try to like. Trying to find a place to stay overnight before trying to get to Wolf Point the very next day, or you can get there in the evening. So they're my two questions, basically. You're going to chat anybody up and...
The fort is, like, abandoned, right? We're not...
Yeah, it's not in active use.
It was built.
It was built. Yes.
Okay. Well, that's interesting enough. I mean, if there is any, if there are any inhabitants there, then speaking to them is going to be an important thing. Do we want to make sure we're coming at what would be a reasonable hour if people who have upon hard circumstances have taken shelter there? We don't want to be sneaking in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's good. True. Yeah.
Probably what you'll need to, there's probably not a lot of like roadside inns, so you'll probably have to basically ask, you know, maybe pay a couple coins to a farmer to sleep in their barn overnight, or camp if you want to camp by the side of the road. Asking about sort of like where there might be a good place to camp, or asking to sleep in a barn would be a good chance to sort of see what the people are like around here. Do you want to do that?
Yes, I would love to.
Yes,
I will push Augustus forward.
Are we trying to win hearts and minds here, or trying to suss out what their opinions? Is this sort of a perception check to sense motive, or is it like a...
I'll tell you, this is going to be like a... this is the only thing you can do. You can do it as a diplomacy check to just be like, be nice, basically, right? And just sort of like, and then like, you know, hey, you know, maybe the Hellbreakers aren't so bad. Or just sort of seed that in. Or you can try like something like a deception check to talk really sort of like bad mouth Cheliax even more, like make up some stuff that hasn't actually happened, or you know, or just be, or a performance check if you want to put on a little skit. You know, however
puppet
you want to do
puppet show.
Or you can just, it's also like, is Gary Lore or society to just sort of talk with the people.
Well, I'd of course would like to discuss some of the legal wrongs that have been committed by Cheliax, and we don't want to let that stand, do we? So I would like to make an impression, not with diplomacy, but with legal lore.
Legal lore, love it. Terrific. Let's see.
Yeah, because you didn't take anything useful.
Oh, no!
All right, whoa, okay,
There are
hero points.
Yeah.
Still, yes.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, I would like to reroll using a hero point.
All right. Hmm. Terrific.
That's that's better because of the Keeley hero point roll.
Yeah.
We're playing with it. I could not.
It is named after you at this point.
Right. Yeah. So there's some you kind of meet some farmers sort of like, or you know, dusk is sort of falling. It looks like they're coming out from their fields to head back there. And you just have to give them a chat. Your first impression of like just talking about legalistic stuff is like it's going over. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. We're just farmers. But you kind of figure out, you find someone, maybe with the younger, the farmer's son is a bit more like, oh yeah, what is it about these tariffs and whatnot? And so you're able to sort of like talk a little bit about their, how maybe things would be a little bit better if Chelly X was, independent. Mm-hmm. One of the things that the farmer is concerned about, as you sort of talk to him a little, talk to him and his family, especially in this area, is that there's sort of been a lot of increased amount of bandit activity. And he's like, well, there's supposed to be some soldiers up at the fort, but nothing. Been quiet. And this is what, I guess, being a vassal to Chilly X gets us. And there is
soldiers,
a sheriff
at the fort.
They're supposed to be, but there aren't, is what he's saying.
Okay.
What he believes. They're not, if they're there, they're not doing anything against these bandits. There's also sort of a sheriff that doesn't sort of attach to one particular town, and they've been no help either.
We need to help each other.
That's right.
Have the bandits been attacking the farm or just people crossing between spaces?
Just people traveling about. So, I mean, you know, but we, my cousin, he got her held up sword point just the other week.
They are between here and the fort?
You know what? I heard that they're even taking up residence in there. A group of bandits and whatnot call themselves the Steel Circle.
Steel Circle.
Steel Circle. Okay.
Tell
you what, if you would ever to find them and tell them to knock it off, I'm sure a lot of people around here would be quite pleased.
I bet.
Yes, and perhaps make sure that the soldiers are doing their job, unless the soldiers aren't doing their job because they've got something to do with these bandits.
I don't know about that.
Well, we can get to the bottom of things.
I can be pretty convincing. I think we can go figure it out.
Terrific. Here's some hay you can sleep in.
Awesome. Okay.
Nice.
So hey, you guys sort of bed down for the night, wake up the next morning, and get ready to head to the fort itself, or just to maybe figure out what's going on here in this mysterious area. And we'll come back to that next time.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Nice. Thank
y'all.